And we're holding on Chof Aleph Amud Aleph, six lines from the bottom. We left off as follows. In the Mishnah, we had a machloikas for Yehuda and the Chachamim, whether you're allowed to sleep under a bed in the sukkah. The Tanakhama says no, and Rav Shimon confirms that with a story involving Gamliel and Chavi, his servant. And Rav Yehuda says you are allowed to. So now we're in the middle of discussing a related issue about what Rav Yehuda defined as an oihel for this purpose, and then that's going to bear on this question of sleeping in sleeping under a bed in a sukkah, once we define what an oihel is according to Rav Yehuda. So we said as follows. We said that we started by saying that according to Rav Yehuda, an oihel that's not made by human hands is not considered an oihel. And he learns it from Gzeira Shava from the Mishkan. Actually, the Pnei Yeshua points out, based on the continuation of the Gemara, based on what the Gemara is asking, based on various logical things that the Gemara is going to ask, that really what it is Rabbi Yehuda is fundamentally basing himself on logic to determine what, but really it's basically more a logic of what would be considered an oihel chashuv and what would not. Anyway, the point is that we described the procedure that they would do when they had kids go to fill up water for the sprinkling of Parah Adumah that's going to be done on the Kohen or Kohen Gadol, who's going to be burning the next Parah Adumah. We said we put in all of these extra rules and regulations to make sure that the tahara for it is on the highest possible level. One of them is we want the people who are going to be sprinkling it, or the people who are going to be preparing the Parah Adumah water at least, are going to be people who never became tahara. So we had these kids that were raised in specially designed courtyards in Yerushalayim from birth, so that they never had, the courtyards are built in such a way that it's not possible for there to be too much mess underground there. And then we said that when it came time for them to go down to the Shiloyach spring right outside Yerushalayim and fill up the water for it, then they'd send them on the backs of oxen. On the backs of oxen, and we said that on the backs of these oxen, they would lay a door on the back of each ox and have the kid ride on top of the door, and that way the door and the ox together form an oihel, so that in case there's any tumma on the ground as they're walking, then it'll be blocked by that oihel. And then we said that the last thing we said was that Rabbi Yehuda had said, well, not the last thing, but we said that that Rabbi Yehuda had said they didn't have doors, they only had oxen. Now the question is, an ox is not made bidei adam, so how does that serve as an oihel according to Rabbi Yehuda? And the answer is that Rabbi Yehuda does agree, even an oihel, if not osi bidei adam, is considered an oihel, but it has to be a larger size. It has to be kimloi egra, if it has to be the size of a fist. And we don't mean the average person's fist. We mean the fist of Ben Batiach, who was a gigantic guy in those days, whose fist was the size of the average person's head. Based on a medrash, it seems that this Ben Batiach might be the same as Abba Sikra, that we're familiar with from the story of the Churban in Gittin, who was Rabbi Yechon Ben Zakeh's son-in-law and the head of the Biryonim. If it's the same one, then we see that he was a very physically powerful guy, which is probably how he became the head of the Biryonim, and his fist was the size of the average person's head. So Rabbi Yehuda would say that he agrees is considered an oihel, even if it's naturally made. Okay. So now to continue the discussion. The Gemara asks, V'hare delas yesh b'kama agrefin. In that case, from the ground until the bottom of the door, if you have a door lying across the back of the ox and it's carrying the boy on it, then the door is many a groifim off the ground. And yet Rabbi Yehuda is saying that they didn't have doors, that they didn't have doors, they had oxen. The Gemara is assuming right now that they didn't have doors because they wouldn't do any good. According to Rabbi Yehuda, they wouldn't be considered an oihel, and therefore what would be the purpose? Tosfos asked the question. I mean, if anything, the door should be more of an oihel than the ox itself. The ox is not made bidei adam at all. The door, at least, was placed on there bidei adam. I mean, Rashi uses the expression that maybe ein derech oihel b'kach. It's not the normal kind of an oihel. However, Tosfos says the fact is that at this point, the Gemara is assuming that maybe an animal, it has more legitimacy to be considered an oihel for reasons that the Gemara is going to mention on Omer Beis, because there's a pasuk that refers to the skin and bones of a person or of an animal as being like schach. So therefore, the Gemara is assuming at this point that Rabbi Yehuda is saying it's one thing, the animal, fine, it's not also the Adam, but at least it's kama agrofin, so therefore good enough. But the door, even though there's kama agrofin, even though there's many, many head heights from the ground until the bottom of the door, wouldn't be good enough according to Rabbi Yehuda. So why not? We just said that Rabbi Yehuda agrees that kinloy egrof is always good enough, then what's the problem? Amar Abaya, Sabaya answers what Rabbi Yehuda means is loy hutzruchu lahari blosses. Rabbi Yehuda is saying they didn't need doors. It's not necessary. The ox itself forms a perfectly good oihel that the kid can sit on top of. Rava Amar, Rava says no. It's not that they didn't have to. Loy hayu mevi'in delosses kol ikher. Rabbi Yehuda is saying they dafka wouldn't bring doors because the problem with doors, a kid is very self-confident. So kid is getting, he's riding on there on the ox, he's riding on there outside. And remember, by the way, you know, these kids were raised in this one chotzer their whole life, because the whole point was we didn't want them to go out of it because they might become tomei with an underground unknown caver. So this is, imagine this is the first time the kid is getting to go on a field trip, riding on the back of an ox over there. He's feeling very confident about himself. He might stick out his head over the side. He might stick out his arm or his leg over the side. And what happens if then they happen to be passing over, and he's going to become Tomei, and that defeats the whole purpose of raising them to Tahara in the first place. So therefore, so Rabbi Yehuda says, so if you have the kid is riding only on the ox, then okay, he's a little more afraid. He's a little more nervous of falling off. Therefore, he's not going to stick any arms or legs or heads out. But if he's sitting on a wide door on top of the ox, then he's going to feel himself. He's on top of the world, and he's going to start clowning around and sticking out his hands and feet and whatever. So that's why Rabbi Yehuda says that you shouldn't have doors, not because they wouldn't be an oil or tumor, but because practically speaking, it might end up being counterproductive. The kever atahoyim, the kid might become tumay with a kever atahoyim that they're passing over without even realizing. So most of the time you cover say the Rava. In fact, you learn a braisa like Rava's understanding. Rabbi Yehuda and the loy hayu mevi'im delosses kol ikher. Rabbi Yehuda says they wouldn't bring doors to put on top of the oxen. Mipnei shadaita shotinat gasa olav, for the reason that Rava said, because the kid is very confident about himself when he's sitting on the door. He feels like he's sitting on something very wide, therefore he can play around. Shema yotzi roishay echad me'evarav. He might stick out his head or one of his other limbs via tamei with a kever atahoyim, and he's going to become tamei with a kever atahoyim as they pass over it. So Rava's reason, not a biased reason, they didn't need it, but rather Rava's reason that it would actually be, that could actually be counterproductive. Whereas the other Tanoim hold that maybe the kids got das is gas on him, but still we'd rather have the door as an extra layer of protection because the kid may not sit exactly on top of the ox. Tosfos brings from the Yerushalmi that they would adapt to use oxen that had very wide backs. So according to the Yehuda, the kid can stay completely on top of the back of the animal and there wouldn't be a problem. But the other Chachamim hold that they would have the doors maybe as an extra level of security. Okay. Actually, it's not in Tosefta, it's right here. Elam Mivian Shvarim Mitzrayim. Rather, Rabbi Yehuda says, we bring oxen from Mitzrayim, Shekreisi Seyan Rechavos, that have very wide stomachs and backs. Vatinokas Yoshman Agabeim, the kids are sitting on the backs of these oxen. Rechosis shall even be a day. They're holding stone cups, because as we mentioned yesterday, stone is not Makabal Tumah, so this way there's no possibility that the cup is Tumah. He geared the shiloyach. Once they reached the shiloyach spring, yodu, they would go down and milum, then they would go fill up the cups for all of the yashrav and agabein, and they'd go sit back on the oxen, again, because either we're not really concerned about kever atahoyim around the shiloyach spring, because people don't usually bury by reservoirs or springs or whatever, or because Rabbi Yehuda and the other Chachamim hold that you actually have to fill it up by hand, whereas in the Mishnah, we learned yesterday that Rabbi Yossi had said that that's not necessary, you could just we don't want them to get off the oxen at all for the same reason, kever atahoyim, and it's not necessary to fill it up by hand, so therefore instead we have them lower it down using chains or strings or whatever and fill them up that way. Okay, So there's no contradiction from this to this that we're saying that Rabbi Yehuda says that once you have an egg growth, then it's a valid oil, because Rabbi Yehuda is not saying that the jewel won't be a valid oil. He's saying, according to Abaye, that it's just not necessary, and according to Rabbi, that it could actually be counterproductive, because the kid is then gonna think that he can stick out his hand or feet over the edge. Okay. But in Mita, now let's get back to our Mishnah. Let's consider the case of a bed in a sukkah, the yesh b'kama egroithim, again, from the floor, from the ground until the bottom, until the underside of the bed is several egroithim, because we said at the very beginning of the Gemara, at the very beginning of the parak yesterday, that we're talking about a bed 10 tefachim off the ground. And yet we learned in the Mishnah, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Noigin Hayusho Yeshenim Taksa Mitzvah B'Fnei HaZkenim. Rabbi Yehuda says that we used to sleep under a bed in front of the Zkenim, in the Sukkah, and there was no problem. So obviously, therefore, Rabbi Yehuda is not considering the bed to be an Oihel at all. So why not? If we're saying that even when it's not made the day Adam, once you have an egg roi for more, then it's considered an oil. Then why would the bed not be considered an oil according to Rabbi Yehuda, such that there'd be no problem sleeping underneath it in a sukkah? The answer is shiny mita hoyol gaba asuya. The difference is that a bed is not made for the space underneath. The purpose of a bed being off the ground is for you to be able to sleep comfortably on it. So the bed is there for the purpose of the area above it. Morning, Yaakov. The bed is there for the purpose of the area above it, not for the purpose underneath, not for underneath it. Therefore, Rabbi Yehuda is going to say that a bed is not considered an oil. So the question is, Shavarim Nami Lagabon Asuyan, Nu, and the oxen, those are also not, Bechorah, you don't use the area underneath the ox to protect things, so therefore, only on top of the ox, you sit on it. So the same idea then, you should say that an ox, according to Rabbi Yehuda, should not be considered an oil. Why, according to him, is it? And we said the kids are sitting on top of the oxen. The answer is, also Robin, Amar Rabbi Lazar, the answer is, when Robin came from Eretz Yisrael, he explained in the name of Rabbi Lazar, Shiny Shvarim, it's different when it comes to oxen, as a matter of fact, yes, the underside of an ox does serve sometimes as protection for the herder, for the cow herder, a cowboy, whatever. Sometimes it happens during the heat of the summer, he goes and hides his head or his whole body or whatever underneath the ox to protect himself from the heat. And during the rain, he can do the same thing. He can stick his head or his body under the ox to protect himself from the rain. So yes, sometimes the underside of the ox is used as an oil, and therefore Rabbi Yehuda says it can be considered an oil. Whereas on the face of it, except for when we're talking about over here, sleeping in a sukkah, nobody usually sleeps under a bed. Therefore, you can't consider the underside of the bed to be an oil. So the question is, Yehochin Nita Nami, Nu, in that case, okay, you don't sleep under a bed, but you do use the underside of a bed for something else. You could say, it protects the shoes or the sandals underneath it. Rashi refers to a Gemara in Bava Basra that says that a bed of a Talmud Chacham has under it only shoes during the summertime and sandals during the winter. So in other words, a person goes to bed, he takes off his shoes, and then during the Rashbam explains over there in Bava Basra, min olam are made out of soft leather, so you wear those during the summer, which is the dry season, and out to Israel, and in Bava, that because that way they're not going to get ruined. During the winter time, when it's muddy and rainy, and then min olam would get ruined, then instead you wear sandalim, which are made out of harder leather. The point is that you always have, you only have the in-season shoes under your bed, nothing else, as opposed to the Gemara says there in Bava Basra and Amoretz has lots of other things under his bed. In particular, there's the idea you're not supposed to put food and drinks under the bed because of Ruach Ra. So the point is that we're saying that a Talmid Chacham's bed, the only thing that's underneath it is his shoes, but that means, in other words, that the underside of the bed is serving to protect the shoes or the sandals, respectively. So you could say the same thing as with the ox. The same way as with the ox, when the sun is beating down or when it's raining, then the herder, the person who's taking care of it is going to stick his head underneath it to protect himself. The same way we put shoes or sandals under the bed to protect them.
So therefore, you could argue that the underside of the bed is every bit as much an oihel as the underside of the ox. Why would Rabbi Huda be saying that the ox is considered an oihel and the bed is not? So the Gemara says, you're right. Ella Amar Rava, no. Rava says there's a different reason why Rabbi Yehuda would say that an ox is different. Shiny shvarim hoyov asurim lahogin al bnei me'ayim shalahem. It's different with oxen because the stomach and all the whole body of them helps protect their inner organs. So in particular, Rashi says the roof of the roof formed by their spine and their spinal cord that forms that's a protective thing over their kishkis, over their stomachs and intestines and whatever. Shenemar, as we find a pasuk where Eo describes metaphorically how Hashem created him in the womb and how Hashem creates every person in the womb, and he says, "Ur vaso tabisheni, you clothed me with skin and with flesh, uvatsamis v'gidim to soichacheni, and with bones and with gidim, sinews and veins and tendons and whatnot, to soichacheni, you made a schach for me." So we see that the bones and the gidim are called schach. Tosfos says, okay, that pasuk is talking about human beings. If anything, an animal is more so, because an animal's back and stomach are parallel to the ground, whereas a person's are vertical. So if even a person's bones and spinal cord and whatnot are considered a schach, how much more so those of an ox, as opposed to with a bed. We never find a bed being called schach. So therefore, so that would be a reason for the Behuda to make that distinction. An ox, yes, is considered an oil, because we see a posik that calls it tzach, but a bed not. And therefore, so the bed is not considered an oil, and therefore the Behuda would say that if you're sleeping under a bed in the sukkah, then no problem. The Iboyesema, or another possibility you can answer, you don't need to say that Rabbi Yehuda is distinguishing between an ox is considered an oihel and the underside of a bed is not. So you can answer Rabbi Yehuda l'kaimei. Rabbi Yehuda could be going according to his svara that we've talked about a couple of times. The Amar Sukkah Diras Kvaba Inan. He says that a sukkah has to be, or at least can be, a Diras Kva. It has to be a permanent dwelling. Where's the Chachamim said that no, sukkah is diras harei. On the first Amud of the Masechta, we talked about that. We talked about, therefore, that's one reason we said why Rabbi Yehuda would allow a sukkah taller than 20 amos and the Chachamim would not. Because the Chachamim say it has to be diras harei, and once you get to 20 amos, there's no other way to do it but to build it keva. Whereas Rabbi Yehuda disagrees and says it can be keva anyway, so it doesn't matter. So by the same token over here, Rabbi Yehuda is arguing that The sukkah is a diras keva, b'havali mita diras arai, whereas underneath the bed is only a temporary dwelling. The loy osi oyol arai mivato oyol keva. So the sukkah is not even a dwelling. The sukkah is only a temporary. B'havali mita diras arai the sukkah oyol keva. So the bed is only a diras arai. It's only a temporary dwelling. The sukkah is a permanent oil. The loy osi oyol arai mivato oyol keva. So a temporary oil is not going to cancel out a permanent oil. Therefore, Rabbi Yehuda says, when you're sleeping underneath the bed in the sukkah, we say that the bed is bottle to the sukkah, even if it's more than 10 tefachim tall. Okay. So the question is, v'horeb shimen de'omer nami sukkah diras keva be'en. Didn't Rabbi Shimon also say, in the previous parak, we had a list of tanoim that hold that sukkah diras keva be'en, each of them in their own way. We said Rabbi Yehuda was on that list because of this, because we're saying that he allows you to sleep under the bed. Rabbi Shimon was on that list because he said that a sukkah has to have three complete walls in the beginning of a fourth. And he said one way of understanding it is that Rabbi Shimon would say that a sukkah has to be a more permanent dwelling. So unlike the Chachamim, who said that it's good enough for a sukkah to have two complete walls and the beginning of a third, and that already is enough for it to be considered a dira, which fine, for a dira's arai, that's fine, 2.5 walls. But Rabbi Shimon had said no, 3.5 walls. So then in that case, he holds the sukkah has to have more of a permanence to it. So Rabbi Shimon holds that sukkah dira's keva b'ayin, and and yet Rabbi Shimon in the Mishnah is bringing from the story of Rabbi Gamliel and Tavi, where he's saying that yes, we can see from that story that you can't be yotze the mitzvah of sukkah sleeping underneath a bed, because Rabbi Gamliel is commenting on how Tavi is sleeping under the bed knowing that he's potter from sukkah. So obviously the fact that the sukkah has to be a diras keva, and the fact that you can't sleep under a bed don't necessarily have to do one with another. The answer is ein v'hal pligi. As a matter of fact, that could be the machloikas of Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon. Mar sava osi oil arayim v'vatel oil keva. Rabbi Shimon will say, fine, the sukkah is an oil keva, it's a permanent oil. Nevertheless, though, an oil arai is going to be able to be mevakalit, and therefore you have a problem when you're sleeping under a bed in the sukkah. Whereas Rabbi Yehuda is going to say no. So really what it comes out, in other words, is you're going to have three opinions. You have most of the Chachamim who hold that a sukkah is diras arai. So in that case, then for sure the oil arai of the bed is going to cancel out the oil arai of the sukkah, and you're going to have a problem. Then you have the Pshimin who says that the sukkah is an oil keva, but he says the oil arai of the bed is going to cancel it out. Therefore, still, so he agrees in practice with the Chachamim that you can't sleep under the bed in the sukkah, but for a somewhat different reason. And then you have Rabbi Yehuda, who says that, you know, the sukkah is a diras keva, like Rabbi Shimon says. The bed is an oil arai. And unlike Rabbi Shimon, he says the bed is not going to cancel out the sukkah, and therefore you have no problem. We mentioned briefly yesterday, by the way, that there are all Rishonim, the Rambam, and the Rif, and the Rambam, among others, who learn that the whole problem of sleeping under a bed in the sukkah is the problem that we learned in the previous parak of sukkah shetachas sukkah, that you have one sukkah underneath another. And we said the Torah tells us you have to be under one schach, not two. So they learn that the problem over here is, in effect, the bed is counted as one layer of schach, and then you have the real schach above it, and then you have, so it's not even a matter of that the bed is posel a schach, it's a matter of that you're under two levels, that you're under two levels of schach. So therefore, again, fitting that into the Gemara over here, then Rabbi Yehuda would be saying that no, the bed being arai doesn't cancel out the schach, which is meant to be more permanent thing, whereas Rabbi Shimon and the Chacham hold that it does. We said in the Mishnah, Amr Rav Shimon, Maisi v'Tavi Avdoi. So we said that Rav Shimon brought a story involving Rav Gamliel and his slave Tavi, where Tavi was sleeping under the bed in the sukkah, and Rav Gamliel pointed that out to the Chachamim. So what we're saying is it's not even really that Rav Gamliel is mentioning it to them in order to teach them a halacha. Rav Gamliel was just mentioning it as a casual aside. Rashi on the Mishnah says on it, that l'b'dichusa ba'alma. He was in a good mood, and he wanted to mention to all the other chachamim, look what a great eved I have. He's not even intending to teach halacha at all, but we're able to learn from what Rav Gamliel was saying, this concept that we're able to learn this concept that sleeping under the bed if a person is not yotzei. In fact, Amar Rav Shimon in a braisa, Rav Shimon says, Tanya, we learn in a braisa, Amar Rav Shimon. Based on what Rabbi Shimon says, we actually learn two things. Number one, we learn that avodim knanim apotu from sukkah, which Tosfos says, I mean, on the face of it, is there that much of a chiddush in it? It's a mitzvah says to shazman grama. Why would we think otherwise? On the other hand, though, we're going to learn later in the parak, we're going to talk about the concept of teishu ke'in taduru, that you have to live in the sukkah, like you have to live in the sukkah on sukkahs, like you live there all year round. So maybe that would be reason enough for women and avodim to be chayiv in sukkah, and we have to say that not. So therefore, based on what Rav Gamliel is saying, by the way, we can learn that halacha. The lamanu, and also we can learn from what Rav Gamliel is saying. Shal yoshem tachas hamita b'sukkah, shal yoshem tachas hamita lo yotzei yedei chevasa. If a person sleeps under a bed in a sukkah, then he's not yotzei. So the Gemara says, the lema midvorov shor Rav Gamliel. Why does Rav Shimon use the expression misichosa shor Rav Gamliel, which sicha implies a casual conversation? Why not from the words of Rav Gamliel? And the answer is milsa agav urche kamash malon. Because Rav Shimon wants us, by the way, to be aware of something. Ki hod amar of acha ba'ada, va'ami lor of amar of acha ba'ada, amar of hamnuna amar rav. In the first version of acha says it by himself. In the second version he says it in the name of Rav Hamnuna and in turn in the name of rav. How do we know that even the casual speech of Talmid Chachamim needs to be studied? So like in this case, in other words, Sichas, Rashi says, Washin Sichas Cholin V'Simcha. It was just like a casual conversation involving Simcha. Rav Gamliel was in a good mood and he wanted to boast about his good Eved. He wasn't even intending to teach Halacha, but nevertheless, even the casual talk of Talmid Chachamim requires learning. The word over here, by the way, is supposed to be Talmud. At some point, the Goyim decided they didn't like the word Talmud, and they had the censors remove it wherever possible and replace it with other words, Limud or Shas or Gemara or whatever. So this is one of them. Really, the expression is Shafir Sichas Timar Chamur, Sichas Cholin, Shafir Timar Chamim, Tzricha Talmud. Anyway, how do we know that? Shenema va'olehu lo yibo. The pasuk says, even if leave, the first pasuk of Tillim, or the third pasuk of Tillim, whatever, says va'olehu lo yibo. Its leaves will not wither, meaning the Talmud Chacham is compared to a tree. Even the leaves of it are something important. So even the leaves, the casual aside, the casual conversation of the Talmud Chacham, you can learn tremendous things from it. And we have an example over here from Rav Gamliel. There's a couple of places in Chassidus where an association is drawn between Sicha over here and Sicha as meaning davening, meaning that there's a level that you connect with the Eibishter with by learning Torah, and then you have like the Sicha Schulen over here, a level on which you connect with the Eibishter by davening, and in this case by Rav Gamliel, not learning, but rather being involved in something else and nevertheless teaching us Torah. There's also a couple of places in Sichas where they never talk about the idea. You think about it, for a regular person to do that, to talk casual conversation like that, would be Dvorim B'Talim, which is also. But for a Talmud Chacham, where his whole Metzius is Torah, so it comes out that even his Sichas Cholin, which is like a secondary outgrowth of what he does, even that, because he's so permeated with Torah, therefore even his Sichas Cholin ends up being something that we can learn from. And in fact, elsewhere in Avodah Zarah, this Gemara is also brought over there. Rashi points out, not only are we saying over here you can learn Torah from it, but also, for example, the Gemara points out in other places that from what the Chachamim say, even just as casual aside, you can learn Osho, you can learn advice of how to be rich, you can learn Refuah, Marpe, you can learn how to be healthier. So everything that a Talmud Chacham says, even as a casual aside, is still something that you can learn something important from. The Mishnah says, "Hasomech sukkase b'kare hamita." If a person holds up his sukkah with the legs of the bed, so Rashi just says over here that we're talking about mita shlema, a complete bed. Rashi doesn't give really a clear definition of what we're talking about. The explanation that Mefarshim say is essentially, we're talking about a frame that has a bed built into it. So you have a frame with at least three walls to it, and then you have the bed is built into that frame, and now what you're doing is the frame extends above the bed, and then you put tzchach on the top of it. So if the person does that ksheira, then the sukkah is kosher. Rav Yehuda Oimer, im eni yechol lamed b'fnei atzma, Rav Yehuda says, no, if it can't stand by itself, psula, then it is possible. So, my time is Rabbi Yehuda. So, why does Rabbi Yehuda say that if it can't stand by itself, it's possible? Pligibo Rav Zera and Rav Abba bar Memel. So, Rav Zera and Rav Abba bar Memel argue what Rabbi Yehuda's reason is. Chad Omer Pnesha in Lakeva. One of them says the reason is because Rabbi Yehuda holds, because it doesn't have any permanence. Because when you move the bed, then automatically the sukkah moves with it. Now, we just finished saying that Rabbi Yehuda holds sukkah jiras keva behin. This is how Rashi learns. So therefore, Rabbi Yehuda would say, that would be a reason why Rabbi Yehuda would say the sukkah is possible. Now, according to that reason, Tosfos says, in that case, what about, we're going to learn tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem, about a sukkah on the back of a wagon. We're going to talk about a sukkah on top of a ship. So does that mean that Rabbi Yehuda would disagree and say that those are no good also? Would Rabbi Yehuda say that sukkah mobiles are no good? Maybe yes. On the other hand, Tosfos says, I mean, why isn't the Gemara mentioning over here that Rabbi Yehuda l'taimei? Whenever we met before, when he said that Rabbi Yehuda holds sukkah diras keva, we said Rabbi Yehuda l'taimei. Rabbi Yehuda is going according to his own svara. We're not mentioning that over here. So for that and for a couple of other reasons, Tosfos actually brings a different explanation from the Yerushalmi that Eimla Keva means the problem is you don't have 10 tefachim from the surface of the bed until the top. So the Chachamim would have no problem with that because what they would say, you have 10 tefachim from the ground until the top. The fact that you have the bed attached in the middle over there wouldn't make a difference. Whereas Rabbi Yehuda would say it would make a difference. So that would be a different understanding of Ein Lakeva. It means, in other words, that it means, in other words, Rabbi Huda is saying that it can't really be considered a proper place to have a sukkah if it's so low. If it's so low, not 10 tefachim tall. Different Rishonim talk about different other understandings, also different than Rashi, of what we mean Ein Lakeva, and many of them say this has nothing to do with the discussion of, that we were saying before, whether sukkah diras keva or diras arei b'inan. Among them are, for example, the Ravid explains, we're talking about, that you use the bed as a wall of your sukkah. It's actually holding up the sach on one end, and you're going to need the bed all the time. Therefore, you're going to end up moving the bed. Therefore, the sukkah is going to fall down. The sach is going to fall down. It's not going to have enough walls. Therefore, Rabbi Huda would say that it's no good. Whereas the Chacham would say, as long as you leave the bed there, it's fine. A different other explanation that some Rishonim bring is where you could be talking about even where you turned over the bed and used it as schach. So is it really considered to have a kliyos? You're going to need the bed soon, and then you're going to have to take it down, and therefore that wouldn't be considered. Whereas again, the Chachamim would have no problem with any of that, according to that explanation. B'chad omem, neshe ma'amidah b'davra makabal tumma. The other explanation between Rav Zeira and Rav Abba bar Memel is Rav Yehuda's problem with holding the bed up using the sides of the legs of the bed, is because you're holding up the schach, which is something that is makabel tumah. Now, up until now, we've been talking about the schach itself. You have rules about how it's kosher and how it's possible. But since what's holding up the schach is these ma'amidim, then it's as if he was using for schach davra makabel tumah, which is no good. So the Gemara says, "My benayu." What would be the practical difference between these two things? So the answer is, "Kivens shenot shvudin shel barzel." Suppose a person, instead of using the frame of the bed for his sukkah, suppose that he stuck iron poles into the ground, v'sikach aleihem, and then he around the bed. So he's using the sides of the bed as the walls of the sukkah. Fine, but the actual schach is resting on iron poles in the ground. According to the first opinion that it has no keva, had a yesh la keva. Then after all, it has a kavias, so there's no problem. But according to the opinion that if the problem is he's holding it up with something that's makabel truma, had a ma'amidah b'davra makabel truma. If he's using iron spit, then those are makabel truma, and therefore that's no good. Now, first of all, according to Tosfos's beginning explanation, which is Rashi's explanation, that the problem according to Rabbi Huda of Ein Lakeva is that the sukkah is movable, and Tosfos says, so what about a sukkah on a wagon or a sukkah on a boat or something? The Ran actually says there might be a distinction, because in those cases, at least, the floor of the sukkah remains the same floor the whole time. When you have a sukkah mobile, yeah, it's moving around from place to place, but the actual floor of the sukkah that you stand in remains the same floor. It's still better, the bed of the truck the whole time. As opposed to Rabbi Huda, we'll be talking about over here, when you have the bed is built onto the sukkah, the schach is placed on top of the bed, and you move the bed around from one place to another, and the floor is not even the same floor from one time to the next. In any case, this that we're saying, the other possibility, it's because of Dovra Makabel Truma. So that brings us into the whole question of Ma'amidim of Schach. First of all, the question is, who is the Halacha like? Now, on the face of it, you have Rabbi Huda against the Chachamim. The Halacha ought to be like the Chachamim. On the other hand, especially if we say like Rashi, that Rabbi Huda's problem over here is that it's not Keva, and he requires the sukkah to be Diras Keva, so what? We've already established that according to the Chachamim, it has to be Diras Arai, and the Halacha is like a Chachamim. So in that case, that would mean we don't care about what Rabbi Huda is saying in terms of Halacha. On the other hand, a number of the Rishonim say that the Halacha is like Rabbi Huda over here. First of all, because again, this that we're talking about, that it has to be keva, is not necessarily the same as the sukkah diras keva be'inan that we were talking about until now of Rabbi Huda's opinion. It may be a different kind of kriyas that we're talking about. In other words, that it doesn't have 10 tefachim until the roof, or that you're going to take away the bed, it's going to fall down, et cetera, et cetera. So therefore, nothing to do with the machloikas of sukkah diras arei or diras keva be'inan. Therefore, that just because we say sukkah diras arei be'inan doesn't mean that the halacha can't be like Rabbi Huda over here. Besides which, the very fact that the Gemara is going into the discussion over here of why Rabbi Huda is saying it and having the whole machloikas and something else that Abaye is going to say over here, that on the face of it demonstrates that the halacha must be like Rabbi Huda. Otherwise, why would they bother? So there are a number of Rishonim who pass in like Rabbi Huda, and then the question is, so is the problem that it's not Keva, or is the problem that it's Dovra Makabel Truma? So if you say that, that the problem is that it's mamid davar makabel truma, that gets into the whole matter of how you hold up your schach, or how you keep your schach in place. So based on that, there aren't a lot of the Rishonim learn, therefore, that in fact there is an issue with being mamid with davar makabel truma, with having your schach held up by something that is makabel truma. Now, most of them hold that you are allowed to have mamid of mamid. In other words, you have, let's say for example, you put up your schach nowadays. So you can't put your schach then directly on the walls of your sukkah. Because the walls of your sukkah are made out of metal poles or canvas or what have you. If the walls of your sukkah are made out of wood, then I guess you could put it directly on them. But otherwise, what you do is you put down 2x4s or something, and then you put your schach on top of that. That way your mamid, what's actually holding up your schach, is the 2x4s, which in and of themselves would be kosher schach. Once you have, now those in turn are being held up by the walls that they're sitting on, and those walls made the different Rishonim talk about. What about, for example, what if those walls are made out of bricks? What if those walls are made out of concrete or something? So fine, again, don't put your, so some of the Rishonim say that it's fine, you still could put your schach directly on those, because if the whole, that depends how we look at it. Is the problem with mamid, like Rashi is saying, because the mamid is tantamount to the schach itself? In that case, then fine, you wouldn't be able to do that, because the Araisa, of course, you can't use bricks for schach. On the other hand, we might say it's only a din de rabbanan, because if you put the schach on top of something which is makabel truma, and you're allowed to, people may mistakenly think that the schach itself can be made out of something that's makabel truma. Well, if that's the case, then the Ran explains, for example, that in that case, fine, putting the schach on top of a brick wall or something is not going to be a problem. Everybody knows you can't use bricks for schach. There's no reason to be gozer in that case. But again, also if you have your mamid itself is held up by something else, which is makabel truma, most of the poskim will say there's no problem with that. After all, the Ran points out, practically speaking, I mean, every sukkah ultimately stands on the ground, and the ground is possible for schach. So therefore, so that would be fine. So for example, you have the walls of your sukkah are the walls of your house, or they're made out of canvas, or they're made out of fiberglass, or what have you, which let's say those things are makabel truma. So then you put down 2x4s or something, and then you put your schach on top of those, and that way your mamid itself is not something which is makabel truma, and your mamid itself is something which would be kosher for schach. By the same token, also, for example, you can't hold down the schach with something that's makabel truma. So they talk about, for example, that to hold down the schach with zip ties or with nails or with other things like that might be questionable. Getting back to the Gemara, Amar Abaya, Loi Shonu Ela Samach. Now, the whole discussion that we've been having, the whole Machloikas, Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim, is we actually have the schach on the sides of the bed itself. So again, you have these three walls surrounding the bed, and you place the schach on top of those. But if you put schach above the bed, meaning what you did is, now we just described the scenario where you stuck iron poles into the ground as a frame around the bed, and then you put the schach on top of that. So that we said that might be a problem because your mom would be dug around a kabel truma. But let's say instead of iron, let's say you used wooden poles, you stuck four wooden poles in the ground and made a frame using those, and then you put the schach on top of those. So you're using the three sides, the three walls around the bed as the walls of your sukkah, but the schach is not actually lying on top of them. It's lying on top of this framework around them. So then ksheira, then it would be kosher, and even Rabbi Yehuda would be fine with it. My timer, now why is that? Well, let's look at the two reasons. Lamanda omalafisha in la keva, according to the opinion that Rabbi Yehuda's problem is it doesn't have keva, hare yesh la keva. Here it has a keva. It can't be moved from one place to another with the bed, according to Rashi, or the bed itself is not holding up the sukkah, so even you remove the bed, the schach is not going to follow, it's not going to fall down, according to the Raavad, or the various other explanations. The point is, you have 10 tefachim, according to Tosfos' explanation, you have at least 10 tefachim now from the ground to the schach. you have the bed in there. Doesn't matter. No different than when you bring furniture into a sukkah. You don't say that that reduces the ten tefachim. So that in the first case where the bed is actually attached to the sides which are used to hold up the schach, then Rabbi Yehuda has a problem with it because from the top of the bed until the schach, you don't have ten tefachim. But here where the bed is not actually attached to the sukkah, it's just the bed is attached to the walls which are forming the walls of the sukkah, then that bed is not reducing the ten tefachim. And according to the second reason that the problem is, in the case of the Mishnah, where you're holding up the schach with something that's makabel tumah, fine. In this case, you're not. So in this case, also Rabbi Yehuda would be fine with it. Okay. Mishnah says, sukkah hamaduvlelas. A sukkah which is miduvlelas, and we're going to see right away in the Gemara two meanings of the word miduvlelas. And a sukkah whose shade is more than its sun, such sukkahs are kosher. Now, Rashi says, didn't we learn in the first Mishnah of the Masechta that Chamasa Meruva Metzilasa is possible, implying that if Tzilasa Meruva Mechamasa is kosher, on Omid Beis, which we'll learn tomorrow, Bez Hashem, the Gemara is actually going to take up that, the Gemara is going to point out, it's okay, this isn't an extra Mishnah that's unnecessary, on the contrary, there seems to be a contradiction between this Mishnah and that one, because that Mishnah implies that only if you have more sun than shade is the problem. This one saying only if you have more shade than sun is it kosher. What happens? If it's exactly half and half, then the Mishnah and the Mishnah seem to be contradicting each other. So we'll see in the Gemara tomorrow, Bez Hashem, how to reconcile that. Okay. Another din, Hamu'uba Kamin Bayis, if the schach on the sukkah is very thick, and it's so thick, it's thick like a house, even if it's so thick that you can't see the stars through it, Kshera, nevertheless, it's kosher. However, with that said, we did learn at the beginning of the Sechta, where Tosfos said that if the schach is so thick that even rain won't go through, then it's kosher, because then it really is like a house, and that's brought la'alocha. It does say about certain Polish rebbeim, I don't remember who, that they used to have an extremely thick amount of schach on their sukkah, but what they would do is they'd poke a hole in one place through the schach, so that in that place you could see the stars, or you could see the sun rays through it, and that way they're yod to that. But other than that, the whole rest of the sukkah has extremely thick schach on it. The Gemara says, "My meduvlelus." The second word of the Mishnah, meduvlelus. What does that mean? Omer Rav Sukkah Aniya. So Rav says it means a poor sukkah. In other words, a sukkah that has very little schach on it. So there's a lot of space between one stick and the next. But you never have three tochim in any one place. So the Mishnah is telling us that fine, even though it has relatively little schach, as long as it has tzilasa meruv mechamasa, as long as in the aggregate you have more shade than sun, then you're fine. Ushmuel amakona oila bakona yered. Shmuel says no. Meduvlelus means one stick going up, one going down. In other words, like this, normally you would put your sticks of bamboo or whatever right next to each other. In this case, he didn't. He put some of them are higher and some of them are lower. So Rashi explains then that we're talking about even if you have, the result of that is you actually do have more sun than shade in your sukkah, and he would argue, therefore it's possible. The fact is, what we say is, if all of them were lying on one level, then you would have more shade than sun. Then Shmuel is saying, the Mishnah is telling us it's fine even as it is. Tosfos asks, what do you need that for anyway? I mean, imagine if the sun was directly overhead. It wouldn't matter how high up, let's actually learn the next piece of the Gemara, and then we'll talk about how Tosfos learns it differently. So Rav is saying again that sukkah has very little schach. Shmuel is saying it has plenty of schach, but it's all mixed up and it's on different levels. So, Rav Toni Chodo, Shmuel Toni Tauhi. It comes out that Rav is explaining that the Mishnah is describing one case, and Shmuel is saying that the Mishnah is describing two cases. Rav Toni Chodo. Rav says that the Mishnah is only describing one case. Sukkah Meduvlelus. My Meduvlelus, Meduvlelus. The word Meduvlelus means that the schach is very scanty. There's very little schach. As long as Shet Silosa Meruva Mechamasa, as long as it has more shade than sun, Shader, then it's kosher. Or Shmuel Toni Taki, whereas Shmuel says the Mishnah is describing two scenarios. My Meduvlelus Meduvlelus. Number one, the word Meduvlelus does not mean that it has very little schach, like Rav says. It means that the schach that there is on different levels. It's all mixed up. V'tauti katani. And so the Mishnah is telling us two cases. Number one, sukkah mohovelas shela. The fact that it's mixed up and the schach is on different levels, that's fine, it's still kosher. Number two, v'shitzi losim, rub mechamasa shela. Number two, the Mishnah is also telling us that if you have a sukkah with very little schach, like Rav is saying, nevertheless, it's fine if ultimately you have more shade than sun. As long as you don't have three tefachim between one stick and the next. So Amar Abaye says, Loi Shonu, according to Shmuel's definition, that we're talking about that the schach is on different levels, this is only talking about Elashain ben zelozeh shloisha tefachim. Only when you don't have a vertical distance of three tefachim between one stick and the next. Avo yesh ben zelozeh gimel tefachim psula, but if you have three tefachim or more vertically between one and the other, then it is possible. If it's within three tefachim, in other words, it's lovely. So now Rashi before had explained that the reason why we would think that a sukkah mevelas would be a problem according to Shmuel is because right now it has more sun than shade. And therefore, so Abaye is telling us that if the sticks are within three tefachim of one another, then we don't care about that. We say if they were all on the same level, it would have more shade than sun, therefore it's fine even as is. But once they're three or more tefachim vertically apart, then you can't say that anymore. Now, here's where Tosfos says, one second though, let's consider, Tosfos says, if the sun was directly overhead, now fine, it never gets directly overhead in Eretz Yisrael, let alone in New York or Florida or other places, but still, in principle, if the sun was directly overhead, then it wouldn't matter how high up one bit of schach is compared to the other. Obviously, the sun would come directly down, beat directly down, and you'd have more shade than sun, because the fact that one is high, the fact that one is higher than the other wouldn't make a difference. So now, why should it make a difference if there are three or more tefachim apart? Rather, Tosfos explains, the reason is because when it's three or more tefachim apart, you can't combine together that schach at all. It's not a matter, in other words, Tosfos says, of that then you have more sun than shade. It's a matter of that you can't really combine together two different things like that are on two different levels at all. Amar Rava, so Rava says, afilu yesh ben zelozeh shloisha tefachim nami, even if there is three or more tefachim between some of the schach and the other, lo yamoran, we're only talking about that it's possible, elasha en begagoy tefach. Only if the stick that is higher up is not a tefach wide. Avar yesh begagoy tefach. But if the sticks that are, or other schach that are sticking up higher than the other are a tefach wide or wider, shera, then the sukkah is kosher, damrinan chavut rami. Because then we can use a principle called chavut rami. Chavut literally means throw down, literally means lower. Rami means throw. So chavut rami means throw it, means lower it and throw it down. In other words, we consider as though once we have that it's a tefach wide, we're able to consider as though it went down and went on top of the schach underneath it. Rashi explains it's basically an outgrowth of the concept of good achis, which we talked about in the previous pet. Good achis allows us to say that a wall that's suspended a little bit above the ground, within three tefachim of the ground, we consider it as though it extends all the way to the ground. When you're talking about the edge of a wall, then the word good achis is appropriate. Here we're not talking about the edge, here we're talking about the entire piece itself that we want it to be considered as though it was lowered, so therefore the expression for that is chavut rami. So then we can say that. And Omar Rava Minah Amin Allah. So Rava says, where do I get that from? Where do I get this distinction that only if it's a tefach wide do we say chavut rami and not otherwise? If not, then we have a bias din that if it's more than three tefachim above, then it's no good. So Ditznan, because of Mishnah in Ohalis. The Mishnah describes, Kodesh HaBayis V'Haliyah, suppose you have ceiling beams of a ground floor and of a second floor, She'ein Aleihem Maziva, suppose they didn't put the actual flooring and the actual plaster on them yet, so right now all you have is the beam, the house is still under construction. V'Hein V'Chuvonis, now suppose that the beams of the bottom floor and of the top floor are directly underneath one another, in other words, that you have So the first beam on the bottom is a tefach away from the wall. The next one is a tefach away from that, so forth. And on the top floor, it's the same thing. Each beam on the top is exactly above a beam on the bottom. So then, truma tachas apas mehen. Then if there's truma, kazayis of a mess, let's say, underneath one of those beams, tachtehel tamei, then underneath that entire beam is tamei, because the beam is a tefach wide or more, and therefore it's an oihola truma, and therefore it spreads truma underneath the whole beam. But, similarly, bein atachtona la'oyona, if you have truma between the bottom floor and the top floor, so on top of one of the bottom floor beams, beinehen tamei, the space between those beams is tamei, but the point is, in other words, the rest of the place is tahor, because the rest of them are under a different oil. And if it's above the upper floor one, connect the rakia tame. So now that thing is not under a roof. It's open to the sky, and therefore the truma just goes straight up as far as it can to the sky. On the other hand, what if the beams on the top floor are offset compared to the ones on the bottom floor? So you have each one on the top floor is above a space between beams on the bottom floor. So if they were arranged like that, then truma tachtein, if there was truma underneath any of them, tachas kolan tome, then underneath all of them is tome, because again, we're going to say chobot rami. We're going to say that we consider as though the top beams and the bottom, as though the top beams were lowered down to meet the bottom ones, and therefore you have one solid decking over there, one solid covering, and therefore you have it's one big oihel and everything becomes tome. On the other hand, if the truma is above them, then it's tame from there up to the sky, but not underneath them, because the oil blocks the truma from going under. The Tonya law, now we learn in a braisa regarding that, all of this only applies when the beams themselves are at least a tefach wide, and there's a space between one beam and the next of a tefach. But if there is not a space of a tefach between one beam and the next, horizontally that is, then if there's tumah under one of the beams, only underneath it is tumah, even though the beams are offset, because we can't say chobot jerami, because you can't bring down the top beam, because there's no room for it between the bottom beams. There's not enough room because you have less than a tefach there. And benehen ba'gabehen tahor, whatever is between them and whatever is above them is tahor. Alma, so Rava says, you see from that, ki isbe tefach aminen chobot jerami, only when there is a tefach of space. Only when the beams themselves are tefach in size, only then do we say chobot rami. Whereas if the beams are less than a tefach wide, we do not say that. And then we say that each beam is a separate entity of its own, and we don't consider as though they were lowered down to go into the space between them. Shmamina. So that proves it, that we only say chobot rami when the beam itself is at least a tefach wide. The same thing when it comes to schach over here, we only say chobot rami when the schach that's too far up, that's more than three tefachim above the other, is at least a tefach wide. And based on what we're saying in the Gemara over here about the spaces between the beams, the poskim also explain what you also need is that the space in which you want the chobot rami to apply should be at least as wide as the upper schach. So in other words, if you have a piece of schach that's a tefach by a tefach, and it's more than three tefachim above the other, not only do you need it to be a tefach by a tefach, as you're saying, but also you need that the space underneath it, into which you want it to be considered as though it was fitting, is at least a tefach by a tefach. And if not, then we can't say chobot rami the same way as we're saying over here with the beam, that you can't say chobot rami if you don't have enough space between the bottom beams that the top beams could theoretically fit into. So all of these things are brought by halacha and shulchan aruch. So if your schach is all within three tefachim, then it doesn't matter anyway. You don't need to resort to chobot rami. Then you have load. So then it's fine. Then it's fine no matter how it's arranged. If the upper schach is three tefachim or more above the lower schach, then you need chobot rami. But then you need two criteria. You need that each piece of upper schach is at least a tefach by a tefach. And you also need that there should be enough space in the lower schach that the upper schach would fit into there if you were going to actually lower it. Okay, we'll continue tomorrow, Best Hashem, with this discussion of Chovot Rami, and then finish off that discussion, Best Hashem.